dig it.
Solid. Right on.
Good morning and welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Good morning to you, Calvin. How you doing, my friend?
I'm doing great this morning, Earl. How are you?
I'm doing fine, man. And I want to, before we get started, I want to thank my good friend Sandy Williams for doing a great job, as always, and filling in on yesterday. Thank you, Sandy. Really appreciate it. I'm sure the listeners enjoyed it. But I want to welcome my guest, my first guest, none other than Mr. Alan Borsick. He is the senior fellow at Marquette Law School. He's also a writer, amongst other things, many articles for the Milwaukee Journal on Education. Good morning to you, Alan. How you doing?
I am good. How are you?
I'm doing fine, Alan. You know, I don't know. I wanted to talk with you because, like you, I'm so concerned and worried about the educational outlook in this country for young people. And it almost appears, Alan, as if we're just not as concerned as a society as we should be. And it's, in my opinion, it can't be that we say that the public school system is failing, and let's focus solely on private. Is that an acceptable way to look at this, Alan?
Oh, definitely not. From my standpoint, I agree with you that there are just far too few people who are actually concerned about the state of things. Because number one, education success is so important not only to the individuals, the kids, but the long run to the whole community, economic strength, the community vitality, the civic vitality of Milwaukee, the Milwaukee area, and just keep expanding the circle. So number one, everyone should be concerned. And number two, if you're just concerned about your own segment and not about kids in general, you're, in my opinion, you're not on the right boat. That that we need to be worried about everybody. And, there are kids who are going to MPS. There are kids who are going to non-MPS schools. There are the kids in the suburbs. Everybody, we all have the need for kids to thrive.
You know, Alan, can you imagine what it would have possibly been like if you and my parents and the people of that day took the same approach that we are taking today about the lack of education for so many young people in the society?
It was just an assumption when I was a kid, which is a long time ago.
You and I both.
You know, every day you went to school, you did your best at school. And just, you know, your parents didn't badmouth the system or the teachers or whatever. There was just a environment of support when I grew up. And is that weaker now? There's certainly a lot of people who still feel and act that way. A lot of parents doing great jobs. But, yeah, times have changed, and it's not the same sentiment. It's not the same strength of public feeling behind education.
And you know, Alan, if ever there was a time, I mean, when you and I went to school, the Industrial Revolution was, you know, at its strongest. And so if somebody didn't go to college, it certainly offered them an opportunity to at least live a middle-class lifestyle, and, because of all the industry that was here. But that's not the case. We're in a technological society, and the future of what's going to be happening long after you and I gone is going to require that the people who will be around have some modicum of education. Is it safe to say that?
Oh, you can't make your living on your back, on the strength of your back, the way you could when, you could name 15 companies in the Milwaukee area alone: A.O. Smith, Briggs & Stratton, Douglas Chalmers, a bunch of the foundries and so on. You didn't really need any education in a sophisticated way to just go in there
and live a middle class lifestyle
around and live things. But even to the degree that there are such jobs these days, or STEM jobs as we call them now, you know, science, technology, engineering, they require sophisticated reading. They require ability to do computer skills. It's not a good economy for someone who isn't really in a position to handle sophisticated stuff.
So Alan, how do we then possibly, how is it that in this society that we live in right now, that we can't see how critically important a time this is? Because I always say, Alan, that my conversations and yours are always about what's going to be happening after we're gone. And we've got to be concerned about what happens after we're gone. And at the rate things are going now, there are failures clearly inside of the public education system. But you always talk about, even in some rural and in suburban districts, it's not like the people are really thriving there either.
Well, I was at an event a few weeks ago in New Berlin, a high-performing district compared to the rest of the state, certainly a wealthy district, conservative politically, and there were about 150 to 200 people. It was basically, well, what are we going to do about reading scores? And you say, wait a minute, New Berlin's doing great, right? Well, a large majority of kids are doing at least okay or really well, but there's still a pretty big number of kids who aren't. So even a place like New Berlin, I was in Elm Grove recently at a school where they're saying, we got to get more of our kids to be able to read at grade level and to be proficient at reading. And so it's something that's not just in a place with a lot of poverty and other problems like the city of Milwaukee. And that's one of the encouraging things, is that there is a surge of interest in doing better when it comes to teaching kids reading. I'm going to be writing about this a fair amount for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel in the next few weeks, I hope. I'm working on it. And I've been up and down the spectrum as far as the economics of it. Places like Cudahy are really taking an aggressive new approach, and Milwaukee Public Schools is trying to do more. There's talk of action in the state legislature and state. So there is some positive things going on as far as trying to set the bar higher and do something to meet the bar. But there's so many negative things going on, too. I mean, just schools are starved for money. That's one of them, and that's a big deal with the state budget coming up. So there, it isn't all negative, but it's enough negative that we have to worry about it.
So, Alan, you say the schools are starved for money. If you, depending on what side of the dial you're on, there are people who say the schools aren't starved for money. They're washing money. Can it be six of one, half a dozen of the other? Who's right?
Well, does every dollar get used well? Frankly, no. And the system is sometimes inefficient. If we went back to zero and tried to build a system, maybe we'd build some things differently than they are now. But if you just look at simply what's going on in schools, what they're able to do, how they're spending their money, and what they're not able to do, you say, hey, wait a minute, there's not enough fuel in the tank. We need more energy here. We need more capacity. One of the things that some of the states that have moved ahead on reading, one of the things they've done is have reading coaches for staff in schools. Well, we don't really have the money in most schools in Wisconsin to have reading coaches, even if they're a really positive thing. It's one of the things that the governor and the State Department of Public Instruction are working on. And a lot of Republicans are sympathetic to that. But you say, hey, we can't do it without paying for it.
You know, Alan, I don't know How come kids can't read today? What's different? Well, I know a couple things. This early childhood education that used to be a staple in many communities is not as vibrant as it once was. But what's different about the way it's being taught that children are having trouble reading?
Well, there's a whole list of things, but it's an entire culture. I mean, social media, computers, the entertainment world, all so much time on screens and such. There just aren't that many kids who are surrounded by books at home in their preschool years, who are getting read to at night, who go to the library and check out books when they're in second or sixth or 10th grade. It's not a reading society. It's a action and entertainment society. And that takes a toll on educational involvement and readiness.
You know, Alan, that's a great point, but you know, this technology, I mean, you know, you can get any book or anything you want to read on without going to the library. But is it that nobody's overseeing children and they're going to choose the entertainment option over the boring reading option every time?
Well, if you think that the reading is boring, then
I'm saying to children.
I'm not saying you. Kids or parents. So if it's a culture that says you know, quiet time reading a book is like and not the first choice or not even a tenth choice sometimes, you know, there's going to be a price paid for that. So are there kids out there and families out there that are doing a great job? Absolutely, and all praise for them. But overall, you know, the TV's on in most homes. I think I read statistics. The TV's on 13, 14 hours a day. Ultimately, and they're not necessarily watching the most enlightening and elevating stuff.
So, Alan, we've got to go to a break. If you hold on, my guest is Mr. Alan Borsick. He's a senior fellow at Marquette Law School. He's a writer at Milwaukee Journal on education. Got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. My guest is Alan Borsi. He's a senior fellow at Marquette Law School and a writer on education for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. You know, Alan, I went to a site called Public School Review. I don't know if you're familiar with it. And it said the 15 biggest failures of the American public educational system. And the top 15 failures in American public education, in number one, it said deficits in government funding for schools. You mentioned that.
This is going to be a big issue here heading towards the state budget, which is supposed to be settled by the end of June. And there's actually more cooperation between the Democrats and Republicans on certain issues than I might have expected. But school money for schools is going to be one where I doubt there'll be much common ground. If you went back to about 2008 and increased school spending in public schools in Wisconsin by the rate of inflation, every year since then, the amount that would be going to schools would be something like $3,000 per student higher than it is now. And that's a lot of money on average from state and state funds and property taxes, you're talking about maybe $11,000 per kid. So we haven't kept up with inflation. You pay the price. And let's be honest, the price is paid much more in a place like Milwaukee, or also, you know, West Dallas or Tulsa, some of the older communities, than in the richer and newer communities, the outlying suburbs. I mean, if I go to a school in Mequon or Brookfield or whatever, it's just a nicer facility with right. more staff than if I go to one in Milwaukee and say, are we going to do anything about these inequities? And for that matter, there's going to be a lot of pressure that the non-MPS schools, the voucher schools and charter schools, are saying we don't get enough money to really afford a good education the way we'd like to pay our teachers what we want. They want to close that gap, which there definitely is a gap. So there's going to be a lot of lobbying and fighting over school money just the next, well, three to 4 months now. But the pressure not to increase spending is very high, and that it's going to be hard to make progress.
So deficits in government funding for school leads to lower fewer teachers, fewer programs, and diminished resources. Number two, decline in school safety. There's been a string of high-profile mass shootings in American schools. How then, Alan, does that impact and affect the education of children? If the safety aspect of it is where it is now.
Well, to be honest, school shootings are incredibly horrible. They have a negative effect on all sorts of kids and parents nationwide. But the truth is, they're rare. And that's not what I think of when I think of safety. I think of everyday issues of just
behavior.
In a classroom focused behavior. On learning,
right.
fighting disorder, kids who are disrupting classes. We've had this school year, and I hate to single out a school district, but Wauwatosa seems to have
right.
attracted more attention, perhaps not deservedly, for having just fights. In schools.
Which is an everyday police, occurrence in Milwaukee public schools.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's problems. I drive by schools on my way to work, and just especially the high schools, there's police cars outside regularly. And you say, well, we pulled police officers from the schools a few years ago in Milwaukee, but they're still there pretty often
right.
because they got problems. You know, now the legislature wants to, this is kind of classic, the legislature wants to require some schools, the ones where they have more problems, to have police officers on duty. They just passed a bill to this effect in the assembly, I believe. I should have my details in front of me, 2 days ago, except they didn't put up any money for it. And you say, okay, who's going to pay for these police officers? And if the schools have to pay, what does it come out of?
You know, Alan, I spent 12 years in Milwaukee Public Schools prior to last year. Last year was the first year after 12 years that I spent time volunteering my time in Milwaukee Public Schools. And I'll tell you, the answer is not police in the schools. The answer is dealing with the issues that families are dealing with. And you've got to address those things. Otherwise, children come to school in conditions that aren't conducive to learning. And you can't blame the district for that, which is what happens. And yet, as a society, we dismiss what is happening with children and somehow think that once they come to school, the schools are supposed to fix that.
Well, I was at as part of this reading project I'm working at, I was at a conference recently, and I ended up sitting next to two MPS teachers, elementary school teachers, and there was advocacy for certain types of approaches to reading, but I was talking with these teachers afterwards, and to be honest, from what they said about the behavior, kids in their classrooms, kids who are just out of control, kids who need extensive personal attention because of their own problems and issues, and say, it doesn't make any difference what you're teaching if you can't get the attention of a classroom.
So Alan, I need to interrupt. Alan, I'm sorry, I need to interrupt you. We've got to go to a break. When we come back, we'll continue the conversation. The phone line's open. 844-967-2789. You can join us. Our guest is Alan Borsig. We'll be right back. Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. My guest is Mr. Alan Borsig. He is a senior fellow at Marquette Law School, and he's a writer on education for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Alan, before we went to break, you were explaining.
What were we talking about?
I was hoping you would remember. But anyway, let's do this. Let's bring Al on from Milwaukee. Hey, Al, good morning. How you doing, sir? You say what?
Good morning. I just have 2 points. One, Mr. Borsig indicated early in his talk that they needed more reading coaches and what have you. Years ago in the 1970s and I worked for Milwaukee Public Schools as an administrator in Title I programs. We had reading labs and math labs in almost 60 schools, and kids' educational attainment increased almost 1 to 2.5 grade levels in 1 year. And they changed what they do with the money that came in from Title I. Instead of providing additional teachers and teacher aides, to putting in computer systems and computer rooms, but nobody's in those rooms. I've been to a number of schools where the computer rooms are there, but there's nobody using them. The other point was, I was at a school the other day at parent-teacher conference, one of the high schools. And the principal was complaining to me about how bad the schools are and how the administration is not doing what it's supposed to do. And I turned and looked at him and I said, the problem is not with our schools. The problem is in the home, because the children are not coming to school prepared to learn. They're hungry. They haven't been asleep at night. They have no adult supervision.
No stability.
And
no stability.
They're not ready to learn. To learn, because they don't have a parent involved, and we're not doing enough to make the laws that we have enforced, I mean, on the books, be enforced, dealing with parenting. That's my opinion.
Hold on, Al. Al on the other end. Al, what do you say about Al's thoughts?
Well, I think there's a lot of truth to that. I mean, oftentimes in these conversations, everything that's said is true. So there were programs going back to the times that he's referring to. P5 was the name of a program that was funded by the state to emphasize opportunities in a number of schools where things were not going so great. And there was clear record that it had some impact. On the other hand, in the long run, things haven't gotten better in terms of reading. Things haven't gotten better. I mean, reading scores in Milwaukee have been stagnant for over 20 years. Reading scores nationwide have been pretty much stagnant for over 20 years. In fact, got worse during the pandemic. But can you blame parents? I have mixed feelings about that, because on the one hand, that's absolutely correct, that a lot of kids are coming to school carrying baggage that you wouldn't want to have a kid carry if you were looking to their long-term well-being. But as Howard Fuller used to say often, the parents are sending us their best kids. They're not like keeping the good kids at home and sending us their worst kids. Schools have to deal with who they have and do it as best as they can. You can't always blame parents for things that are going on. So it's not good to play a blame game about this. It's best to figure out what can we do with the kids we have, and how can we reach more. And there are ways, I think, that schools can reach even not every kid, but a lot more kids than they have to this point, even kids coming from pretty difficult circumstances.
Al, you one more shot at it.
Okay, I can say that you know, I put five of my children through Milwaukee Public Schools, and my children learned how to read at home before they got to school.
That's correct.
And my wife and I took care of making sure that when we brought those children on this earth, that we were going to make them as good as or better than we were, which means we oversaw our children and all of their activities and made sure that we were involved in every part of their education. And my children excelled in all of the schools they ever went to. They were always at the top of the class. In my neighborhood, the kids in the area would come to my house, and they had school in my house, because if my kids had homework, everybody had to do homework. That's the way I raised mine, and I think that it's more about people out here making babies and dumping them off on someone else. Our schools are the fourth entity of our educational process, not the first, because children from 0 to 5, or actually before 0, are learning from their environment in the womb, in the community, in the home. Then they get to school, and people look to the school to do what the parents are supposed to be doing. We must hold the parents accountable for the problems that we have in the schools, because they're the ones who made these children, and they're the ones who are supposed to be helping to raise them.
So, Al, thank you very much for the call. You know, Al, Mr. Borsuk, there are many who feel the way Al does, and I kind of, you know, I kind of agree. I mean, I agree with you that, you know, raising children, we somehow in this society think that that's an easy undertaking. As a parent, you know, myself, who's raised 3 children, it's not easy. And it gets more difficult, Al, with technology and in the times we're in now, than it was back when I was raising my children. I think there are many more things that are in the way that impact and affect what is happening to children. You go back to your and my time, Al, when for the most part there were nuclear families. Mom got to stay home while dad worked, and mom got to work with kids. What the other Al said is true. You know, in the time I spent in the schools, I would see children come to school. Sometimes they didn't get to school until they were 6, 7 years old, and they didn't know their alphabets. They couldn't count to 10. And so, you know, it's a difficult undertaking for a teacher who is attempting to educate 35 children at that young age, and you've got a couple of them, Alan, who are so far behind, there is no time for the special treatment for a few. So it's as you stated, a whole lot of different things collectively that go into this.
Well, in my mind, both things are true. Number one, schools are being asked to do more than it's reasonable to ask of them, to be not only educators, but but parents to be responsible for the well-being of kids, to feed them, to clothe them, to make sure their medical needs are addressed. It's just, it's not right, it's not fair. All of that is true, except how do you change it? I mean, changing parents, you say, well, parents ought to do a better job, which, of course...
we all agree to.
Number, yeah, everyone agrees to that, but what do you do about it? And so, like I said, if the schools, one of the problems is that the schools are the best place to try to address that because that's where the kids are. You can't just decree parents will act better. It isn't so simple.
Let's do this. Let's go to Tom from LA. Good morning, Tom. How you doing? Thank you very much for the call. You say what?
Good morning, Earl. First off, we the people ultimately are the government, and we must never forget that. This is a really, really, I mean, a huge battle. Because the thing is, if you have anything where, you know, you have it where you're controlling the parents of some sort, you're going to have right-wingers up in arms that you're controlling, you know, the parents, unless they're black. Then, of course, they will have no problem with people controlling them. And Al's right, but then they also take extracurriculars out of the school, which are the things that actually motivated kids to, you know, actually get good grades or stay in school or, you know, what have you. Now it's all these league games. I mean, it's like the deck is already stacked against the kids. And the thing is, yeah, it would be nice if we could, dare I say, you know, take every woman and put one of those devices in her until she's 27 or 30 years old, Norplant or whatever that thing is that doesn't allow for them to get pregnant. But that is about as big government as you can get. So people need to decide, do they want big government, and do they want people, intruding a little bit on their lives to have a society of the kind that Al is talking about? Or you go by the 80-20 rule. 80% of the people in this country, you know, you can take I'm sure Alan can agree to this, you can take a classroom of 30 kids, and you can see from those 30 kids that, you know, 20% of them are going to excel, just like in business, just like in life. 80% of them are going to be either the middle or to the bottom.
Hey Tom.
And the whole point is...
Okay, go finish your point. Finish your point.
And the whole point is we have to take care of those people somehow at the bottom. Otherwise, they will revolt. And then we will have chaos in our society. I mean, there is no easy answer to this. If I had a magic wand, I'd say, okay, every parent be like Al, right? Well, we can't do that.
Right.
And we can't control and tell parents, oh, this is the way you're going to be. Because then you're going to have every person going, oh, my gosh, government's trying to tell you what to do. Or society's, I mean, crap, they had a problem with Michelle Obama saying eat healthy. I mean, what the hell are we going to do if it's,
Tom, thank you very much for the call. Alan, you want to respond?
Well, I want to be careful not to sound like I'm advocating or friendly to people advocating such levels of control of what parents, what adults do. Number one, it doesn't work. Number one, it's not right. My wife ran a family resource center for St. Vincent de Paul at one time, in the heart of what we would call the central city, and in a very retail way, you know, one by one, small groups. Just no parent wants to be a bad parent, at least almost no parent.
Right.
And giving them advice, here's how to play with your kid. Here's advice on what to eat. Here's what to do to establish a healthy environment around your kid. Here's toys that are constructive. People want to get that kind of advice, and we're not doing a good job of helping and coaching parents when it really could pay off. So would good parenting be more people doing good parenting be a great thing? Yes. Is it easy to do? No. Are we doing it now? Not particularly. You know, we're not really reaching out to people. We're not putting energy, government energy or private energy to the degree we need it. So it's a tough subject.
So Alan,
if everyone had better lives, we'd all be better.
And you write about it, and you do a great job of writing about it. Got to go to a break. Hang on. We'll be right back. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. My guest is Alan Borsett. We'll be right back. I swear I can't wait any longer. Every day my love goes on. Oh, baby. And I'd like to make it.
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. My guest is Mr. Alan Borsick. He's a senior fellow at Marquette Law School and a writer, prolific writer on education for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. We're talking about education and where we are in this country, and whether or not we are committed enough as a society to make sure that the future of this nation receives the best possible education that they can have. Let's go to Middleton and Cassandra. Hey, Cassandra, how you doing? Thank you very much for the call. You say what?
Oh, hi, Earl. Thanks so much for taking my call. And it was such a pleasure hearing from Al, the black married man, talked about how he prepared his children up for school. And Earl, if you recall, I had made the same statement a few weeks ago, and I said that we really have to get the message across, especially to our black urban poor, that they must prepare their children for school. Their children must be ready to learn. And Al repeated the similar issues that I did. And it starts in the home. It really does. And I know many administrators and academics, they are uncomfortable with that information. But we really have to get that message out that if you want your child to succeed, there are things that you need to do before they enter the classroom. Similar to Al, both of my children were reading before kindergarten. They were also doing basic arithmetic. And we just have to tell parents that you have to be the CEO of your child's education. You just cannot bring your child on the first day of class with a new outfit, a new backpack, and then expect the teacher to do all the work. You need to be doing things beforehand. And Earl, I want to end with this. The difference between what I'm seeing in many of the urban schools and the suburban schools is that, you know, they set out a list of tasks the children must be able to perform before they enter kindergarten. Now, I'm not sure if Milwaukee school districts does that, but there are things that the children have to do. Number one, they have to be able to recognize their letters and their numbers. They also need to have some computer knowledge, be comfortable with using a keyboard.
Yeah, I'm sorry to interrupt you, Cassandra, but because of time constraints, I have to ask you, you're a professor, and I don't know, I see children and mothers who move from shed to shed with no stability, who work at a Kroger, and they're doing what's asked of them. It is them and their child and their children, and they're alone. And they've got all they can do to keep a roof over their heads, clothes on the back, and food on the table. They're doing everything that society says they should do without support from the fathers of those children. And mm-hmm. and we say that they should somehow be able to overcome all of those things. I'm sorry, go ahead.
It takes 10 to 15 minutes to read your child a book at night or any time during the day and teach them how to read. Reading does not have to occur in one lesson. Every mother can spare 10 to 15 minutes to read a book to her child.
So let me.
And we just have to get the message across that if your child cannot read by kindergarten, they're going to have a very difficult time in the education system.
Hey, Cassandra, I wish I had more time. Thank you very much for the call. Alan, you want to respond to that?
Well, I think it's great when parents do that kind of thing. We did it ourselves with our kids. But what about the people who aren't or who aren't capable? You got parents who can't read very well. They're not going to read to their kids. So what's the obligation of the school? The obligation of the school is to take the kids who come in the door and move them forward as best as possible. The obligation of the community, of the state, is to make sure that
their resources,
the educators, have the cards in their hands that they can do that successfully or with maximum possible success. So you can't let schools off the hook for everything that's going on in society. You also can't blame schools for everything that's going on in society. There's a middle ground there. I mean, like I said, I've been spending a lot of time talking about reading with people lately. How much does it matter how a school teaches reading to kids? I've talked to experts who say it matters a lot, and I've talked to others who say, oh, these kids, they live in such terrible homes, and if they aren't given health care and lead-free houses and so on, they're not going to ever learn. Well, both sides have a lot to be said for it, but that doesn't let anyone off the hook for doing their best. And that's my biggest fear overall, is that we, parents, educators, even kids themselves, policymakers at every level, aren't doing our best. And that's what I would say, is we need to do better.
You know, Alan, it's unfortunate that the time has disappeared. It always goes fast when you're around. I got to make a commitment to have you on more, because of all the things that go on, there's nothing I think as important as making sure that the future of this society, that children are prepared and ready to go.
I agree with that.
Thank you, my friend.
I'd be glad to be of help going forward.
All right, I'll get back to you. Got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back.
Seems that every time we're together, seems like the world is